Welcome to Forecast News with Millie and Afshin, where we'll be talking you through some worldly events coming up around the world this week that we think you should know about. If you're new here, please do subscribe and give your comments on the events we discuss. But we better get started, Afshin. 14th of October 2024, Monday, of course. Now, we better just start with a few events that we can predict for Monday in the Middle East. In particular, we've got the start of the second round of polio vaccines to the children in Gaza, which is set to take a couple of weeks. And that's again the World Health Organization, which is trying to reach the 640,000 estimated children in Gaza. But I suppose what many would be saying, if there are the facilities to reach these children, to access them and give them medicine, they should be giving them food and water and an array of other medicines that they actually need. I mean, we don't know how much a child without a limb or that's suffering from burns, which we're seeing all over the place now, how much a polio vaccine is really going to help them. But also the question is, wouldn't you think it makes more sense to address this cause? I mean, this is a multi-million dollar program that the World Health Organization is running again for the second time. But what contributes to polio? It's no clean drinking water, no hygiene, feces all over the place, sewage on the streets. It's not a good solution, is it, what they're doing here, surely?
No, I mean, it is a Holocaust. And the pictures we saw after Sunday night's multi-billion dollar, multi-million dollar warplane strikes on tents in a hospital for sheltering people, children. I mean, and you saw the screams coming out of the fire, whilst the complicit NATO nation propaganda media privileged the deaths of Zionist killers who aid the genocide. It is just unbelievable. So the polio vaccine is, yes, as you imply, like going into Auschwitz, giving some polio vaccines and then sending all of them to the Zyklon B showers to die. This is genocide. This is real-time Holocaust. And they're trying to ban TikTok, and they're trying to prevent the news getting out to NATO nation countries like Britain, in the European Union, the United States is arming this. And then they're saying, yeah, stop the polio, because the polio spores and so on might, because this area is actually so small, Gaza and the Zionist entity, as it's called, could affect Israelis. But the number of Jews leaving, Zionist Jews leaving Israel, shows this is the worst place in the world to be a Jew, Israel. It's the end of the Israeli project, no matter what these NATO countries are saying.
Yeah, although Israelis and a lot of Israeli politicians do say Israel still remains the safest place in the world for the Jewish population. But yes, the polio vaccines are very controversial. We mentioned,
and I should just say, it being Forecast News, mm-hmm. we don't know on any day this week whether Iran is going to retaliate massively for this rumored U.S., British, Israeli strike on Iran, whether it be oil facilities or nuclear facilities. Iran will retaliate and give the lie to what you just said about the minister saying it's a safe place for Zionist Jews.
Yeah, and what we do know, just a few more things happening on Monday in relation to the Middle East. We have got the UN Security Council, which is going to be discussing Lebanon on Monday. Lebanon, which they may be needing polio vaccines very soon as well, if they end up in a similar state to Gaza, the children in Lebanon. But they're going to be talking about the 1559 UN resolution of 2004, which called on foreign forces to withdraw from Lebanon and for the disbanding and disarming of all Lebanese and non-Lebanese militias. That's what they're going to be talking about at the UN. But the Iranian foreign minister, Abbas Araghchi, is in Muscat and Oman on Monday. He who has said Iran is against escalation with Israel and the United States and supports peace in the region. So he's going to be over in Oman having those discussions. But as well, we mentioned the Nobel Peace Prize last week, which Japanese nuclear bomb survivor Nihon Hidankyo won last week. But it is 30 years on Monday since former Israeli Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin and then Foreign Minister Shimon Peres and former President of the Palestinian National Authority Yasser Arafat jointly won the 1994 Nobel Peace Prize for the Oslo Agreements, infamous and controversial, but clearly peace didn't work out very well back then, if here, 30 years later to the day, we've got what we've got now going on in the Middle East. But that was 30 years ago today.
Yeah, I should say Toshiyuki Mimaki has not been given much publicity after winning the Nobel Peace Prize in terms of what he said after winning it, which was, I thought those fighting hard for peace in Gaza would deserve it, saying he was surprised they won the award instead of people working to stop the genocide. Interesting. And of course, our friend, though, won the Nobel Prize for Economics, James Robinson.
That's right. We do know him. So congratulations to him. And of course, a lot of prizes are still going on throughout this week. I think we better get to Tuesday so we can try and keep it quite succinct for people watching. Tuesday, the 15th of October. Now, quite a big event happening on Tuesday in Islamabad in Pakistan is the 25th Shanghai Cooperation Organization Summit, the organization that was originally established in 2001 by Russia and China initially in Shanghai. Shock horror. Now, Prime Minister Shehbaz Sharif of Pakistan is going to be chairing it. And we've got heads of government coming from China and Russia, obviously, and obviously Pakistan and Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, India, Iran, and Belarus, which joined in July 2024, so just a couple of months ago. They're going to be going. And the main goals of this summit are combating terrorism, economic cooperation, climate change and environmental protection, strengthening multilateral dialogue and regional stability and security. But obviously, counteracting threats to peace and security was a big reason for the establishment of this organization. But who is threatening these countries right now? Why do they need peace and security in these particular nations?
Well, clearly, it was set up kind of as a rival to NATO. Strange having it in Pakistan, given Imran Khan is the most popular leader there and claims that the United States overthrew the democratically led, the democratically elected leader of Pakistan. And then they're having the summit there. Yeah, I think, Iran being there, very important.
Kid's criminal, of course, currently in jail. So, you know, a lot of corruption charged against him, and he's been convicted for it. So,
which he denies completely. And he says it was the United States coup. Of course, he was in Moscow with Vladimir Putin all the day. Well, yeah.
Sure, a lot of murderers deny being murderers, but
if you're Pakistani, comment below and think. Tell us what you think about Imran Khan.
Tell us
on that. So it's a bit strange. I think China already reacting to Pakistan and the new leadership for its closer ties with the United States after the coup, the arguable coup in Pakistan. So it's a turbulent one. I think the Shanghai Cooperation Organization meeting. It won't get much coverage, of course, in NATO propaganda media because they're petrified of a organization that unites that many people in it. If you take the populations of the countries involved, they make NATO look like nothing, albeit that NATO has more weapons, obviously. Military budget.
Yeah, well, of course, they're not NATO countries, but I guess saying perhaps NATO is threatened by this summit, which is interesting. It's sort of the antithesis of NATO, or the NATO rival, with these countries being members. But then also, we should add that the UK, the new UK Foreign Secretary, David Lammy, is also meant to be in Shanghai on this day. Actually, well, obviously, this is being held in Pakistan, but he's meant to be visiting Shanghai and Beijing in China this week. I think it's suspected it's Tuesday, but certainly at some point in the week. And he's going to be. Pardon?
He's David Lammy, his education paid for by United States NGOs and forces. He's a British foreign secretary, but he's really an American agent.
Okay, well, the Israeli agent then is, why is it then? So he's going to be meeting some British firms whilst he's in Shanghai, and he's going to seek investment with China and kind of to reset ties with China. That's what the UK government is saying. But this maybe seems a little odd because the UK has certainly in recent years been criticizing China, certainly Chinese products, particularly with regards to the tech world. I mean, obviously, Huawei Tech was a Chinese tech firm, was banned in the UK in 2020. when it came to 5G networks in the UK. So certainly has quite a turbulent relationship with China and its products at the minute. So I guess the question is why David Lammy is looking to seek ties with China with regards to companies there. What's his agenda?
And why the Chinese meeting with genocidal foreign ministers? The picture went viral of him with Netanyahu. So, you know, there'll be war maybe in this region, and there he is in Shanghai. So Goldman Sachs results come out on Tuesday, 15th of October. Welfare cheats, arguably, because Goldman Sachs is basically subsidized by the U.S. government and the U.S. public money to make it seem like a profitable private partnership company. They make loads out of the war in Ukraine, like BlackRock, because of all the money doled out in subsidy to Goldman Sachs. But I suppose those results will be watched with great...
Perhaps David Lammy will be keeping an eye on that. as he's Andrew in China.
Tate, court hearing for Andrew Tate, the podcaster. Is that what you call him? What else is Andrew Tate?
I guess media personality.
He's very much against...
Whoever he is.
Very much against the war, the genocide in the Middle East. Actually, lots of results on Tuesday. Bank of America, I noticed Warren Buffett, the equally subsidized, arguable sage of, what's he called? Warren Buffett, top investor, made loads of money in companies that are actually given hidden subsidy through various public money, arguable corruption. He's going back into Bank of America shares. Their results are out. Citigroup on Tuesday, the 15th. These Citigroup massively subsidized after the 2008 crisis. So rich people will be looking at all those results and cheering the results, I think, because they should be making lots of money, I would assume.
Okay, so Tuesday is going to be a big day for them. We better jump to Wednesday. Wednesday, the 16th. Of October, another big summit on this day in Brussels. It's the first ever EU Gulf Cooperation Council Summit. EU Gulf Cooperation Council Summit. What do you think I said? Golf. Golf, not the sport. The GCC nations. But that's going to be co-chaired by the President of the European Council, Charles Michel, and the Emir of Qatar, Sheikh Tamim bin Hamad Al Thani, who is the rotating president of the GCC countries.
He has the largest US base in the whole of the region.
Oh, okay. Well, perhaps something to do with it, I don't know. But this is a way for the countries of the GCC, which includes the UAE, Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, Oman, Qatar, and Kuwait, to develop a closer partnership with the EU. I mean, it's never going to hurt to make friends, is it? I suppose if the Arab nations are able to gain some influence over the EU bloc and to perhaps we're able to have their say through diplomacy in a closer relationship. It's arguably a good way to go about things, right? Even if they don't always agree with each other. This is promising, surely.
They're in Brussels for this.
Yeah, yeah.
The horror at these EU nations arming Israel to kill hundreds of thousands of children and burn them to death, men, women, and children in Gaza and in Jerusalem, and invade Lebanon and bomb Yemen and bomb Iraq and bomb Iran. Clearly, GCC ministers, maybe if not publicly, definitely in private, will be telling these Europeans, what the hell are you doing? Whether it's going to make any difference. Arguably, the place to be, and they probably should be, is because Western Europe is in collapse. Germany about to hit a huge economic slump. They're desperate for Arab money. And maybe there's some degree of conditionality is required from GCC countries as regards EU support for genocide in relation to investment opportunities. But Mark Rutte gives his first press conference ahead of NATO defense ministers in Brussels, in the same corrupt town as the summit with GCC ministers, presumably talking about World War III and the need to fire long-range missiles deep into Russia, which has more nuclear weapons than any other country in the world.
Yeah, but I suppose this is why a step towards closer diplomacy is going to be a way that they can get their influence, as they say, and talk about these things that you mentioned. But also, as this is happening, the EU is due to present its EU enlargement package on Wednesday, which I suppose is to help make them bigger and better, perhaps, if we want to say that. But these are documents explaining the EU's policy on enlargement, and it looks at the development and the progress of the countries who are either candidates or potential candidates for joining the EU, adding to its already 27 member states. I don't know how different this report is going to be to the 2023 report, which also looked at the progress of nations in the Western Balkans, in Ukraine, Moldova, and Georgia on their respective paths towards the European Union.
Georgia's not gonna join now, is it? And Ukraine is a dictatorship because elections, opposition parties, free press was all abolished by this Marshal Zelensky, arguably, and people are already talking about the end of Zelensky anyway as they lose this Washington proxy war.
So you don't think they've got a shot?
What?
So you don't think they have a shot of getting into the EU?
In fairness, the economy of Ukraine has been utterly devastated and destroyed by the US proxy war, as rumors of mass corruption by Zelensky and his gangster friends mount. So perhaps it should be part of the EU, because Britain, France, Germany, they're all facing economic collapse too on the altar of Washington hegemonic power. So yeah, maybe they should join the EU. Britain won't be joining either anytime soon, I don't think.
No, I guess not. But yeah, and Moldova, as we'll see later in the week, they've got a referendum on this very issue, a reverse to the type that the UK had. But we'll get to that later in the week. But we should get to Thursday, the 17th of October. Again, in the EU, there's going to be a vote on the finalists for this Sakharov Prize for Freedom of Thought, Afshin. I don't know if you're up for this prize. But this is going to be at Strasbourg in the EU Parliament. And this is a prize that recognises individuals and organisations that defend human rights and fundamental freedoms. They'll win €50,000. So it's in your interest to try and win this prize. But they're going to vote on a shortlist for three candidates for this. And I think Elon Musk, the Twitter or ex-owner, is up as a nominee for this. Venezuelan presidential candidate Edmundo Gonzalez, who Western nations wanted to win the recent Venezuela presidential election. We've got the Palestinian movement Women of the Sun and the Israeli movement Women Wage Peace and others who are up for this award. So it's quite an eclectic mix up for this prize. But this is a prize named after the Soviet nuclear physicist Andrei Sakharov, who won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1975. And he is someone who spoke out against the Soviet Union. So that can give you an idea of what this prize kind of is. But it seems like a strange one with such a huge mix of candidates, isn't it? I mean, Elon Musk versus Venezuelan opposition leader, Palestine versus Israel.
I don't think anyone cares about Andrei Sakharov or
he's dead.
And any prize named after him. There's a CIA cutout. There's a part of the weaponizing of the human rights industry to destroy freedom in the global south, and that's what it exists for. Be nice if Elon Musk won it, since we owe our freedom of the press to such a large degree to Elon Musk right now. Without him, people wouldn't know about Gaza, and people wouldn't know about the genocide, even if he likes photo opportunities with Netanyahu. Very, very odd, that really, isn't it?
Yeah, well, we'll keep you all updated on who wins that on Thursday.
We're talking about the annual dinner for Donald Trump. Alfred E. Smith. I thought it was going to say Alfred E. Newman, Mad Magazine. No, he's at some dinner.
Is he even going to make it to a dinner on Thursday? He should probably be indoors at this point.
What do you mean? Do you mean the assassination attempts?
Too many of them.
It's clear there are more and more assassination attempts. Can the deep state kill him, as they have killed previous U.S.?
Yeah. I mean, who's going to be the chef at this dinner? That's hopefully not someone who dislikes Trump.
He's beating Kamala Harris in the late Holocaust Harris in the latest opinion polls, I noticed. So that must be worrying the big military companies, the big arms companies, the big financial interests. But Zionists will be happy because he's paid Trump by Sheldon Adelson casino billionaire's widow, Miriam. NATO Defence Ministers meeting on Thursday, 17th of October.
Yeah, it is. I was going to mention that on Friday when it concludes. I just want to mention for Thursday, though, the Chatham House in London, which we have mentioned a few times, or the Royal Institute of International Affairs, if you want to call it that. The Ukrainian ambassador to the UK and former commander-in-chief of the Ukraine Armed Forces, General Valery Zaluzhny, he's going to be hosted at the Chatham House to talk about the evolution of the war against Russia and what could happen next in the conflict. I mean, no representative from Russia here. Maybe they were invited and chose not to attend. Can't make that assumption. But again, going to be difficult to have this kind of discussion without a Russian counterpart, right? I mean, surely they're going to be the ones who know more about what's going to happen next in the conflict, not Ukraine. I don't know.
Chatham House, a MI6 cutout in St. James's Square in central London. Who knows if Britain gets its way and Starmer, the deeply unpopular MI6 asset, US Washington proxy asset, he's certainly not a British asset, so the people of Britain believe, he might have got his way and got the go-ahead for British multi-million dollar missiles given away to Zelensky to fire into Russia, in which case St. James's Square, Chatham House, where this Ukrainian ambassador, how can he be an ambassador if it's a dictatorship in that country and doesn't represent the Ukrainian people? Who knows? It'll be under attack, won't it? Because Russia has said that it will attack those countries that are complicit in any deep attack in Russia.
Yeah, well, I suppose it works both ways, right? And as we've said many times, Russia has bluffed quite a lot over the past couple of years. So if they deem it worthy of taking that risk, then that's up to them, I suppose. But we better get to Friday, 18th of October, where we can mention the NATO Defence Ministers meeting that's coming to a close. But just firstly, just want to mention, starting on the Friday until Monday, is the annual APEC Finance Ministers meeting in Peru. And that's the Asia Pacific Economic Cooperation, which is made up of the US, China, Taiwan, Japan, Russia, Indonesia, Vietnam, Canada, South Korea, Brunei, Chile, Malaysia, Mexico, New Zealand, Papua New Guinea, Peru, the Philippines, Singapore, Thailand, and Australia. And I do think it's pertinent to draw people's attention to this meeting and summits like these, because you've got the US and Russia, you've got China and Taiwan, and these are countries kind of all at war with each other in some way or another. But diplomacy in other areas does still go on between these countries. And there's going to be representatives from these nations. And the US, which hosted this APEC meeting in 2023, it was still attended by Russia's Deputy Prime Minister Alexei Overchuk instead of Putin, because he had the ICC arrest warrant against him. But the US didn't stop a Russian representative from coming last year. And it's a kind of an example of the behind the scenes, isn't it? Which signifies business as usual in some areas, you know, despite what's happening between the US and Russia, China and Taiwan and such and such.
But how can they be discussing world trade in Peru at the APEC finance ministers meeting if the United States and all its puppet states like Australia and Singapore and Papua New Guinea and New Zealand, these are not real countries, right? They're just South Korea occupied by US soldiers, Canada, another puppet. How can all these finance ministers be there, and Russia and China, which is sanctioned by the United States? It's very difficult to do trade if every time you try and do any trade, you're told by Washington, don't do trade with that person because they're not bowing down to Washington hegemony.
So, yeah, but then you'd say...
You just say at the press conferences, they always go, like when it's a foreign minister's meeting, people will go, oh, so did Butcher Blinken meet with Sergei Lavrov at the sidelines of whatever summit? No, absolutely not. Mm. So no doubt they'll tell us that the U.S. Finance Minister, who's the U.S. Finance Minister? Janet Yellen. Who is this? I don't know. Are they going to meet with the Russia's Finance Minister? No, they don't, because talking's wrong.
Yeah, but I think it shows that the chances are they probably will. They might not be super overt about it. They may even deny it, but this is happening. They aren't going to be in the same room together.
And China GDP figures come out that day, and the United States will send its minions to destroy people's idea of what the Chinese economy is like, because you can expect all the propaganda. There is no free media in these NATO puppet states saying China's economy is in deep trouble. Is it really in deep trouble?
Yeah, but at the same time, as a cooperation, they would say they somewhat work together on these things. It's only interesting for people to see that these kind of events are still ongoing and under the radar in some kind of way. But while that APEC summit starts, there are a couple of concluding meetings on Friday. We've got the, as you mentioned, the latest defense ministers meeting in Brussels, where the new Secretary General Mark Rutte has said South Korea, Japan, Australia, and New Zealand, often referred to as the Indo-Pacific Four or the IP4, they're going to be participating at this NATO defense ministers gathering. Interestingly, but also the European Council Leaders Summit finishes in Brussels as well. So I'm sure there'll be some kind of crossover at this summit, because I guess the NATO and the EU is quite interlinked, clearly, isn't it?
And they're the same, just broke marionettes. Joe Biden's rescheduled his trip to Germany for Friday, the 18th of October. I don't think he'll get there, will he? I mean, I don't know why he didn't.
Oh, that's right. Well, yeah, we've got to mention that. Obviously, he didn't happen last week when we mentioned it.
I don't think it's true. I've got some. My sources are telling me operational use only, not for publication. Maybe we're not supposed to tell people.
Oh,
a one-day visit to Germany. Then. But what is? How can he go to Germany if things get even worse in the United States over the current week ahead?
I suppose that's why it's not confirmed. It's probably a provisional meeting.
And it says Berlin, not Ramstein.
Predicts.
Yeah, and probably, it says Berlin, so the rumors are, not Ramstein base, where all those tens of thousands of US soldiers occupy European land in Germany. But I mean, I don't, as many people say, he is mentally unwell. So maybe, he won't know where he is. Anyway,
it doesn't matter. He's got, what, 2 weeks left in the job, technically. So it probably doesn't really matter where he is at this point anyway. We better finish on the weekend very quickly. Saturday, the 19th of October, Saturday until Sunday, the G7 defense ministers meeting this time starts in Naples in Italy, which is the first Italy has hosted, so a nice holiday for people going there. Italy's defense minister Guido Crosetto is going to be the host figure of this event, and on the second day, a meeting with him and his counterparts in Japan and the UK are having a special meeting for some reason, just those three, as a little trilateral meeting, apparently secret meeting maybe. The G7, obviously a political and economic forum predominantly, so kind of odd that they're even having a defense ministers meeting. It's not a defensive organization. I'm sure they would defend their right to have a defense ministers meeting, but why are they having a defense ministers meeting when...
I mean, the idea... So many of those ministers will have been at the NATO meeting.
Yeah.
Japan's not in NATO, that's the point, I suppose. Then they go to Naples, and all that time, all their NATO weaponry is being poured, multi-million-dollar weaponry, at the babies of Gaza to decapitate their head. And they'll be dining out, drinking at, I don't know where this, where in Naples it is, a beautiful place, Naples, of course, Palazzo Reale in Naples. Maybe they can take the boat over to Capri, while the people of Italy know from the demonstrations we've seen in Rome and in Milan over the past few days, they're scrolling the pictures of burning babies. Do they not realize how out of touch they are with their populations in Western Europe? These NATO defense ministers are complicit in genocide, and just because the wimp Karim Khan of the International Criminal Court and Patsy of Washington refuses, other people all around the world know that it's these NATO war ministers meeting in Naples that are complicit and facilitating the genocide.
Yeah. Yeah, and you mentioned Japan. Remember, Japan is actually in Brussels on Friday at the NATO defense ministers meeting, as well as a little side country there. So, so that is all connected. Yeah, so if South Korea, Japan, Australia, and New Zealand are going to be at the NATO defense
meeting. Basically, both. Even though the G7 isn't even that powerful anymore because China's recovery and the BRICS summit and the BRICS world is so economically powerful. These NATO countries, the G7 countries, they don't represent Earth, really, do they?
Well, I don't think they're trying to represent the Earth.
They are.
We should quickly mention as well that Germany's Olaf Scholz is holidaying in Turkey on Saturday in Istanbul. He's going to be meeting with President Erdogan.
Holidaying
there, I'm sure, with his presidential counterpart. They're going to be holding a press conference. On the agenda is Ukraine, the Middle East, migration, and economic policies, apparently. Don't know why Turkey is so important to Germany. Scholz said of Turkey, it's an important partner, particularly with regards to Ukraine or on the matter of Ukraine, which, again, I don't know why is so important to Germany either. But
they paid off Turkey to take in refugees from NATO's wars. And clearly, so far, they're desperate to presumably take in now Ukrainian refugees, since Turkey is full of the refugees of NATO's of Washington's proxy NATO wars all around the world. And Erdogan, very strange position as he continues to rail against the Gaza genocide and at the same time support economically behind the scenes the government of Israel. But then again, I suppose Qatar, which owns Al Jazeera, similarly, brilliant reporting on the scene, but simultaneously US base and therefore de facto involved in the genocide. Britain, it's planes every time off that Lebanese coast. By Sunday, I suppose you want to move on to who knows what horrific pictures we'll have seen of men, women, and children burning.
Well, Sunday we certainly can't predict, nor can we really, as last week, really predict a lot of this week, other than the few summits that we've mentioned and the few bits and pieces. But on Sunday, 20th of October, then, there is going to be a presidential election in Moldova, neighbor of Ukraine to its west. But on the same day as this election, there's going to be a referendum in Moldova on joining the EU, which I alluded to earlier in this episode. Now, Maia Sandu has been the president of Moldova since 2020, the first female president. Seemingly strategic, perhaps, that she's organized an EU referendum on the same day as the presidential election. Her party of Action and Solidarity, is a pro-EU party, which is why they're having this referendum. I don't think there are any serious challenges to her on this election. I think a few of the other candidates are more of a sort of cheerleaders of Russia, at least to a greater extent than she is, and that's not hugely popular in Moldova for obvious reasons. And I think in 2022 as well, when Sandu's government formally applied to the EU 2 years back, a survey found 61% of Moldovans were in favor of joining. So I think she's probably going to win this one, don't you think, on Sunday? But I don't know that it's Moldova's decision to join the EU, as we see from the progress report from the EU earlier on in the week.
But I mean, Maia Sandu is a CIA puppet. She's not really representing the people of Moldova at all. And that's why there were mass demonstrations about poverty in Moldova in the past 24 hours, 48 hours. What are they shouting? Thanks, Sandu, for poverty and hunger, for Moldova without the European Union. Sandu, go away. She's hated. And of course, what this is really about, because it's not her or the party that runs Moldova that's in charge, it's Antony Blinken, the butcher of Gaza, that is in charge. And what they're trying to do here with this European Union, which is itself a proxy of Washington, is to destroy the people of Transnistria, which is this area in Moldova, which is Russian. So this is part of the expansion, part of the war on Russia. She's a central part of that. And we just have to see if the people of Moldova can overthrow the hegemonic power of Washington in Moldova. Propaganda, of course, so widespread. The media, they ban all free media in Moldova. You can't get a view about what's happening in Ukraine. In Moldova, all you get are lies. And given Western Europe is in economic slump, terrible times ahead for Moldova, because it's turning its back on the BRICS nations that are the story of this millennium and century.
Yeah, well, she's arguably popular enough, but we'll see from this election and from the EU referendum vote as to her popularity. Moldova would obviously say it's an independent country and not influenced by the United States. But just very quickly before we finish, I should mention that there's going to be parliamentary elections in Iraq, or in the region of Kurdistan, which has been delayed many times. I think for about 2 years this election has been delayed. There's been an electoral overhaul. There's been a lot of disagreement on how their electoral system is to be run. I think the High Court of Iraq had to get involved. And in February, they reduced the number of parliamentary seats from 111 to 100 to dismiss some of the minority seats. So I think they've since put 5 back in. So 5 of the 100 seats will be for minorities. But current Prime Minister Mansour Barzani, who knows if this election is even going to go ahead when it's been delayed so much, and perhaps doesn't even matter if it goes ahead or not. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the United States troops are still occupying in Iraq. They're not wanted there by the Iraqi parliament, just showing that the United States can just be there like it is in Syria without the consent of people. They're just invading hordes, basically, in Iraq. And presumably the popular mobilization units of Iraq will be bombing Israel all week. So going to be difficult, Kurdistan area of Iraq, and the Kurdish areas, for them even to hold elections, given that Israel and the United States and Britain perhaps will be bombing Iraq, as they have been off and on for years. Of course, NATO propaganda media makes you think that the illegal war on Iraq ended in 2003 or something, but obviously that's just not true.
That
war, of course, tens of millions killed, wounded, or displaced. So if there are elections, they will be destabilized by NATO proxies and Washington itself, clearly, to have their outcomes.
Yeah, and it remains to be seen. But we better leave it there. I think thank you very much for watching or listening on this episode. Please leave a comment, like the show if you're watching on YouTube. Please subscribe and do give us your comments on the events that we've discussed. And do follow all of our social media. You can see it in the description of this show on YouTube. But we'll see you next time. Bye for now.
Subscribe.